So what's our game plan? Do you have like an outline? How do you want to take this?
Well,
I've got material.
I want to talk about why we want to do the show.
Yep.
You know, you mentioned that we need to tell people it's okay to question this.
Absolutely.
My motivation recently has been at school, they're going through the geologic time scale.
And
I'm thinking this would be a good time to throw. Are we ready? Yeah, it's 9:30 on the minute.
Yep.
Good morning. This is Scott Mitchell with yet another, I think the 48th episode of Let's
I think
Bible
that's right.
Speak.
You're almost to 50.
And that's exciting. I'm
almost
here with
as many years as we are old.
Isn't that something? I'm here with a familiar face, Theron Hall. I'll let him talk a little bit more about it for the new people who he is.
We do this show to try to, and I don't intend to convince anybody that there's a God necessarily with the radio program. What I hope to do is create interest and thought and a desire to find out more about who God is and what he does and what he does in our lives. And that's kind of the purpose of the show. And encourage people just to read the Bible for what it says and trust God that he knew what he was doing. So we're going to talk about evolution and creation today, kind of introduce the topic, because we can't do it justice in an hour by any means.
Not in an hour.
I've got a list of books. Theron has a stack of books we can talk about. So Theron, before we get, won't you go in for the new folk?
For the new folk?
Explain who you are.
Okay.
And what you do and why you're here.
Where do I start?
Well, at the beginning. And if it was Bugs Bunny, he would say, millions of years ago, in a tiny pool of water, there were two tiny amoeba. But don't go back that far.
That's funny that you say that, because this whole story is about beginnings.
Yes.
Right? That's what this is all
about.
Okay. Yeah, we've been friends since around 2001, I think.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure it out the other day.
Feels like a long time.
Yeah.
Way too long.
For good reasons, yeah.
But, I remember you talk about having a radio program, and your first episode you aired before I even found out that you'd actually started. And then I was on your second episode, and I said, hey, we got to record this thing.
Yeah, and you did.
And I did. And it's been interesting ever since then. And so it's evolved from that little studio we used to be in to then we went Facebook Live so we could have a live feed.
And then you did the website.
And then the website, and we send CDs, and it's just, it's taken a life of its own.
To listen to my radio app.
I thought about mentioning that. It's been working better, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, and there's a Christian at Eastland who's intentionally trying to use that app. He's not on Facebook, but he's been trying to use the app to listen. I told him that we'd be on today.
Yeah.
And so I think he may be listening now.
And speaking of all that, getting information and contacting us, you can do that through Facebook Live today. If you want to make comments on screen, Matt's over there.
Please do.
He's got the eyes in the sky. That's Matt Durbin behind the mic, the techno genius. And you can also go to the website that Theron put together called letthebiblespeak.faith. Facebook page is Scott Mitchell's Let the Bible Speak, and there's a story behind why it's called that. Don't necessarily like the name on there, but there's a reason. Also, we got the radio app of listen to my radio. You can use that.
That
as
has
well.
Been working better.
Download
too,
the radio station.
Yep.
Contact information. I've got plans today to go to the store and buy big numbers to make a board to set on the table with the phone
Good
number
idea.
On it. Bill Buchanan keeps asking me to do that, and I've not done it. I got to get
right.
that done. But you can call my cell phone at 812-620-4034 today, and I can put it on speaker, and people can hear. It may be a little bit of a delay here and there, but we can at least get that on.
Yep.
We haven't figured out the phone here yet, but it's 812-365-9864. 812-365-9864. Again, my cell number is 812-620-4034. So I'm going to go back and mention real quick what I did. My very first recollection of hearing anything about evolution was on the Bugs Bunny show.
Are you serious?
When I was a kid. And
I didn't
put two and two together until I started learning what this stuff was. And I remember somebody asked Bugs Bunny to say what happened. And he said, where do you want me to start? He said, we'll start at the beginning. And Bugs Bunny says, millions of years ago, in a pool of water were two tiny amoeba. And the guy says, no, not that far back.
Yeah.
So that was my first introduction to evolution.
Yeah.
And the Bugs Bunny show was teaching that then.
Yeah.
And so since having become a Christian, I've gained a lot of interest in this because, first of all, I love science.
Oh yeah,
I love true, honest science, and I think it's really cool. When I was a young teacher when it was Patoka Elementary, two of my students actually, the Indian history book started out, the very first words in the book were billions of years ago because it went through some geology stuff before.
Yeah.
And those two boys took black magic markers and marked out billions of years ago.
Really?
In their Indian history books.
Really?
And I didn't ask them to do that. They just did it. It was kind of interesting that they felt that way about that. So
yeah?
This has been an evolving thing for me. And
no
recent,
pun intended.
No. Nice. I saw a shirt that reminded me of Darren Barker. At my daughter had a basketball tournament in India, and there's a shirt. Of course, all these kids are homeschooled. And there's a sweatshirt that guy's got on across the gym. It says, "I prefer my puns intended."
Oh,
so I thought that was the Darren Barker shirt, but I haven't gotten one yet. But
for my puns.
Anyway, recently at school, the kids have been learning about the geologic timescale and plate tectonics and ocean floor spreading and all these man's years and all these kind of things take. And they come to me, and I'm like, "Well, you can answer it this way, you know?" Because I said, "Well," because a lot of them claim to be Christians, and they talk. They, "Well, how do I?" I said, "Well, if you feel that way, here's how you answer it. The book says this.
Yeah, right,
you don't
right,
have
right.
to believe what the book says. You just explain what the book says."
Right.
And so that's kind of got this thing to me. It's a constant reminder every year. The kids go through these chapters about these things, and we and sometimes kids leave my room mad at me, and sometimes, especially when I was at high school, but. The purpose of the show, we talked to you the day, you mentioned that it's okay to question this. So won't you speak to that for a moment before we get into some ideas about some things?
That's a great lead-in. Let me share something with you.
Well,
so,
let's do that.
Well, let's do that. That's exactly why we're here. Let's talk about stuff. Let's talk about that.
Let's do.
So a book that we'll be quoting from today is a book called Evolutionists Say the Oddest Things.
Got one of these on my desk.
Yep. Surprising. Yeah, because I got it. I got it for you at the same time I bought this one. After I'd just seen a talk, by the way, from one of the guys from this organization, Surprising Admissions from Leading Scientists. And I posted a link this morning on our Facebook page to some information about Dr. Don Patton.
Yeah.
He's a Christian, and I believe he actually is a geologist. But he goes, I saw a talk he gave several years ago. I haven't seen him recently, so I'm not sure what his latest material is. But he went and walk through statements that evolutionists say kind of within their inner circle when they're not, you know, basically being out on the front line where they're supposed to defend evolution, and they're admitting that there's issues.
Yeah.
But they circle their wagons very quickly if a creationist steps in and says, "Well, I mean, aren't you allowing for the possibility that there could be a designer, I mean, another force at work here?" Mm-hmm. And, oh, they'll quickly close the ranks when you challenge them with that. But when they're honest with themselves, they'll kind of admit, "Well, you know, we kind of got some issues here." And I'd like to quote some things that refer to some things that evolutionists have actually said. But I think the intro to this book on the back is interesting because it's a great intro to our topic today. And reading from it, "Most scientists proclaim loudly that evolution has been thoroughly proved. But if you take a close look at their statements, they reveal that there are glaring holes and inconsistencies. In fact, no part of evolutionary theory is exempt. Evolutionists Say the Oddest Things," book of course, "collects some of the most devastating admissions of scientists and leading science publications into one book. You'll be surprised what evolutionists say when they think creationists aren't listening."
Okay.
So, and that's a good characterization of the way things are right now.
Let me say this too. I in no way want to disrespect anybody or make it sound like people are stupid or anything for believing what they believe on either way. I didn't, as if anybody's watched this show, I didn't grow up with the Bible. I was 22 before I even got one. Mm-hmm. So as I was going through school and hearing Bugs Bunny and different things, I didn't even think about, well, that's not right.
Yeah,
you know, it's stated so factually.
Right. Why would you question it? Right.
If you don't know about God, it's just acceptable because it makes sense. Mm-hmm. But here's what I've got a daughter at Western, and we were talking about this the other day. And she's a biology major, so she's been through a lot of evolution classes and heard a lot of these things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the statement that was made was that this idea of evolution is the best they could come up with without including God. And so without God, then it would make sense if you ignore some things about what you're getting ready, what we're, it makes sense on the surface, but when you get into the details,
oh, yeah,
all of a sudden things kind of, the wheels kind of start falling off of it. And so this radio program, Facebook show, whatever you want to call this, is not going to prove to you that there is a God necessarily.
Sure.
But it will, I think, if we're honest, show you that the geologic timescale is wrong.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Which begs the question, well, then what's the truth behind all this?
Right.
And that's what I want people doing. I want people to take this introduction to this topic and dig deeper.
Yeah.
And look at the facts.
Yeah. Right.
Get your Bible. I mean, we're going to read a few things out of the Bible from Psalm 8, you know, about the paths in the sea, and go to Job and read about the water cycle. Mm-hmm. It's all there.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got to be honest with what we're given. Mm-hmm. And sometimes what we're given really isn't factual, like the river, the Colorado River carving the Grand Canyon, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
You go there and they say this is what happened, but scientifically it's impossible.
Mm.
And maybe we can get. I haven't even really got a lot of that in my notes.
Yeah, we only have an hour.
I know it's crazy, but it's those things people say though that make it seem so factual. And here's Satan's deal. All he wants us to do is doubt God.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to believe in Satan.
Right.
We just have to doubt God. He doesn't care how we feel about that. So if he can get us to question, well, is a day really, when the Bible talks about a day, is that a day or is it something different?
10 million years.
If we can destroy the first, say, 11 chapters of Genesis, and all then Christianity's done.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's all he wants. And so I want people that are Christians to be able to defend themselves. Mm-hmm. And I want people that aren't Christians to be able to approach these things honestly. And so I've got the website creation.com open right now on my computer.
Mm-hmm.
Go there and read some articles. There are over 11,000 articles on that website about all kinds of things. I've got a stack of books. You've got your books. I've read, you know, this book, The Case for Christ, Lee Strobel's book. Really good. Mm-hmm. I'm about to finish it.
Yeah.
There's a book that Rush Limbaugh's brother wrote. It's called Jesus on Trial. It's very much like The Case for Christ. Read some of these things and find out what you can find out.
Right, right.
And look at these. So what kind of information do you have? Because I've got my notes. The cool thing about this show is I don't get together with who's coming on here with us.
Yeah.
We just kind of prepare our notes,
and
then we sit down, and they kind of somehow overlap and do just fine.
It works.
We've never rehearsed the show. We've never really. So
what do you want to talk about? I think, and to that point, I think, Scott, in particular, you have a real good knack for engaging people in conversation. And remember, we were eating, it's been a few weeks now, but we were in Louisville, and we were eating at Culver's, and we were just talking, just casual, and I said, you know, this is a lot like the radio program.
Yeah.
We just sit and we talk about Bible stuff. And it's a conversation. Do we have some notes? Yeah, but in the end, hopefully it's engaging and it's something that our listeners enjoy listening to as well. Mm-hmm. One of the things I think might be good, and I appreciate your thoughts on this, but when we talk about evolution, we talk about creation, we talk about creationists, I thought, you know, it might be useful to give a definition. What does it mean to be a creationist?
Okay.
And there's different ways people will argue it. And there actually are different philosophies within even creationism. I don't know how much we'll touch on that in our hour. But let me give you a very simple definition of a creationist. Mm-hmm. And most people know this. Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth.
Yep.
If you believe that, you're a creationist.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you may have a different thought about time scale. You may have different thoughts about how that actually occurs. But essentially, a creationist is the person who believes that that is true.
Yep.
That is essentially a creationist. Again, there's different schools of thought beyond that, but that is the fundamental definition of a creationist.
So what would you say, and I've got one word in mind, and I'll see, what separates then, what's the one ingredient in all this that separates a creationist from an evolutionist, do you think? Which, if you could think of one word, what would you say?
God.
Okay, and I would think with that, what you just read,
right?
Where would you put time in that equation? Because isn't it the key ingredient to an evolutionist? Isn't it time?
Time. Well,
and so
okay,
that difference of how we see how old things are.
Right. You're going to get me spun up really quick.
I'm telling you, man.
So, again, we've talked about this a little bit. We're not necessarily, especially in an hour, determined to try to drill in one specific flavor of creationist thought. But I think this idea, and again, I'm getting on my soapbox here, but this is based on material I've read and some my own look at the evidence.
Yeah.
I am just not convinced that you can just throw enormous numbers and ridiculous amount of time, and that somehow solves the problem of life.
Yeah, and that's
that's what this book is about.
Yeah,
honestly,
That's the signature in the cell. Is that that? Yeah.
So oh yeah.
Your books.
Oh yeah.
That's one book that I don't have. I've read parts of. I need to get that book.
Yeah, get your PhD, and then you'll really be able to read this book. Yeah, it's a tough book to read. It's a great book.
Well, you could explain it to me, but you couldn't really understand it for me. So,
where have I heard that before?
I don't know. There's a book though that's more simply written my kids got for me. I encourage you to go to the library and get. It's called The Giraffe Neck, Where Darwin Went Wrong.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The first seven chapters are wonderful. I didn't realize until I got to chapter 8 what this dude was doing. He spends the first seven chapters totally destroying Darwinian evolution.
Right.
Even explains,
which is not that hard to do.
No, even explains how all the animals could have fit on the ark and all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
I get to chapter 8 and realize he's still an evolutionist.
Yeah.
Then he throws in aliens and different things that where life could have come here. But he totally destroys Darwinian evolution in a very thorough way. He handles it beautifully. And talks about the time thing and the improbabilities that exist. But what he says, the way he put it in terms of time was, these animals would evolve, there would be a mutation, they would die out, evolve again, a mutation would occur, they would die, and eventually that mutation would stick, and so that's why all this time is needed for these things to evolve, die out, and re-evolve and die out until a change came that would last.
Right.
Okay, and that's the way he explained it. In the book, that these changes, it took a lot of time, because there would be a mistake in the evolutionary process. It'd have to start over.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you're hitting on a critical fact. Mm-hmm. You read a book from an evolutionist who was willing to step back and challenge the status quo, and admit there's problems. And one of the things that, because I actually raised my hand and asked Don this question after hearing what evolutionists will admit when you really get into the inner circle and they start talking about, guys, we've got problems here. You don't have to be a Christian. No. You don't have to be creationist to kind of go, wait a minute.
Yeah.
What's going on here? Because they're really not being honest.
Yeah.
I mean, let's just call it what it is. And I even said, now, if let's just assume I was not a Christian. I was an evolutionist. I went to school studying this stuff, taking it as fact, and then I get into my graduate school, and then I realize, wait a minute. Everybody said this is absolute fact, it's absolutely proven, and still a lot of the premises that Darwin said they have completely fallen apart. The fossil record doesn't match what he predicted. The cell, which he thought was a simple thing, unbelievably
complex. So this
complex.
Was your pre-Christian days is what you're talking
well,
about.
Well, I was a Christian at the time, but I was saying, even if I was not a Christian, what you're saying is, if I broke into this inner circle, I would then be like, what have you done? What are you guys doing? I mean, I would really feel like they were being intellectually dishonest. Mm-hmm. And of course, sure, I'm biased because I'm a Christian, but I'm telling you, I think if you're an evolutionist and you really took a hard look at the evidence, they've got a lot to answer for.
Well, and that's why in that book that guy goes into, he said evolution, he says it basically ends that chapter with, it should not have happened, but I still believe it did. And so that's when he goes into something else causing the evolution rather than what Darwin said.
Right.
So I've got about three big things that are really easy to talk about.
Yeah.
And in terms of showing that the geologic, again, not proving there's a God, but that the time scale is wrong. One of them is dinosaur poop. One of them is the Methuselah tree.
Yeah.
Those are two big ones. And do you know how old the oldest tree is on the planet?
I've heard thousands of years.
Well, they found there was one that was about 4,800 years old. The other one, they found a newer one, it's about a little over 5,000 years old.
Wow.
Those are the oldest trees on the planet. And they're still getting older.
Yeah, right.
So if they're still aging, why aren't there trees on the planet older than that? I mean, what is that?
Right, right.
There are bristlecone pines, and they're in California. And there are 4,500 and 5,200 years old.
Yep.
Why is that the oldest tree on the planet? Now, it does, again, doesn't prove God, but if you study back
Genesis
history,
talks about
is anyway. There, yeah. If you date back using the Bible to when the flood, the worldwide flood would have occurred, it's if the flood really destroyed and everything started over at that point, well then that would fit that more than an evolutionary. Those are the kind of things I want people to look at.
Right, 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 right.
It just doesn't fit. Now, it doesn't prove God, but it should cause people to think, now, wait a minute, if that's true, then what else? And that's what I want. I want people digging into this on their own. Mm-hmm. I told my kids, you can't take my faith and make it. It's got to be yours.
Exactly, yeah.
And I want people to make their faith stronger by studying these things.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid of it. There's nothing to be afraid of. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to question it.
Yeah.
So anyway, I kind of took over the conversation there. What do you have in your notes? Because I stopped you.
Oh, but I've got lots of notes.
Well, go ahead.
We still got 40 minutes. Woo, we're on a roll.
Oh, speaking of which, if you have a phone call or something you want to make and just joining us, you can go to Facebook Live, make a comment, or you can call my cell phone at 812-620-4034. It'll ring in here and we can put it on speaker and we can put you online that way. You're laughing, Matt. What are you laughing about?
We have a question. Can you explain the possum on the table?
The possum on the table.
Oh, Martin?
Well, that's Martin. And that's become our mascot. Priscilla kind of helped with that a little bit.
Yeah.
Theron's daughter encouraged us to kind of sheep. He was hanging from the ceiling in the other building.
He was, yeah.
And so he's become kind of the our show mascot since early on. But there's no real explanation for Martin other than that.
Yeah, we don't know where he came from.
He is a mammal. And they have found fossilized mammals inside the stomachs of dinosaurs that weren't supposed to exist at the same time.
Oops.
Maybe that was a good segue into that. But anyway, we'll get into that later. Yeah. But that's the explanation for Martin. Pretty much it?
That's all I know.
All right.
Yeah, I think you got it covered.
All right. So anyway, get to your notes before I...
Well, one of the things that you're alluding to, and I think folks that... I mean, they look at the truth of the Bible and they say... And they realize, wow. This, depending on how it resonates, you kind of, at some point the light bulb goes off and you realize, wow, this is true and it's powerful, right? But I think it's common for somebody to kind of go, but wait, I've been taught evolution, and then they feel like they somehow have to reconcile the two to each other.
Yep.
And one of the things I'll caution you with is, we're not here to like discourage anybody by any stretch.
No, I just want
to. But I don't think that's as necessary as people think, because I think when you look at the evidence, it's weaker than you've been told.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It is. Oh yeah.
Because when you
I don't think you have to just somehow embrace both and make them
when you read
live together.
The social studies book in the middle school, the science book at the middle school, it's just stated as fact. There's no question.
Right.
And
right.
So kids think they take this and they're, well, it's got to be that way. It's
what
in my
they were
book.
Told, right?
I mean, why would anybody?
Right.
Well, that's the best. Again, that's the best they can do without including God.
Right. Right.
And we have to keep that in mind. That's their purpose, is to come up with a way for things to have happened without there being a God.
Yeah.
And there is a certain point where, and we talked about this before the show, an atheist doesn't want to believe and isn't going to, no matter what the evidence, if that's the position they want to take. A creationist, before we discovered all this stuff, a lot of people read the Bible and had to take it on faith alone. There was no scientific evidence. I'm not asking people to take a blind leap of faith here.
Right, right.
That's not what we're doing, is saying, look at the evidence and see which one makes the most sense to place your faith in, because both are faith-based. So are you going to place your potential eternity on when at the end you die and you're dead, like Rover, dead all over, lights go out and that's it?
Yeah.
But what if that's wrong? What if that's wrong?
Then you have a lot to think about.
Now, I don't believe I'm wrong, but if we're wrong, if we're creationists and we're wrong, and when we die and we're dead, like Rover, dead all over, okay. But what if we're right?
Yeah.
There's a big difference.
a little bit.
And one of the kids said something really interesting yesterday, day before each day in school. We were talking that the word immortal came up in the vocabulary words.
Really?
I said, what's an immortal? And one of the kids said, well, really, we're all immortal. See, because we either go to heaven or hell, we're eternal that way. I'm thinking, well, that's deep. But that, if that's true, mm-hmm. then there's a big, big difference on the end of this thing, what happens to us.
Right.
Well, that's backed up by science, because science says you cannot create or destroy energy, it just changes form. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've heard people make that argument too. Yeah.
I want people thinking about that. I don't expect for a 55 minute talk on evolution and changing anybody's mind, but hopefully get them thinking. Right. What am I really doing?
Right.
Why am I here? A statement made by somebody I thought was great. The two greatest days of a person's life are the day they were born mm-hmm. and the day they find out why. Isn't that cool?
I like it, yeah.
And I've done that. I felt, I've gone through a big chunk of my life not knowing why.
Yeah.
And well, now I know why.
Yeah.
And I want other people to know why. But anyway, we
got lots of notes.
Carry on, Mr. Bowditch.
Now you're really on that now.
Well,
I'm
going to start reading that book to my class next week when I get back.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, Isaac told me. He said, that is a really good book.
I know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Carry on.
Mr. Well, Hall. We can go to scripture. We had talked about on Facebook that we might explain what the creation minute is.
We need to do that.
And we can play some of those here if we want to. But you mentioned creation.com. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole story about them and answers in Genesis, but I don't know if we have time for that. If we do, we can get into it, but we don't have time for half this stuff. But the Creation Minute is a radio broadcast, a piece that they put together. Mm-hmm. And I literally, after listening to one of their talks at a homeschool convention, I went to their booth and I said, you know what I really would like is like a 1 minute clip that talks about creation that we can use on a radio program. And the guy was like, well, I don't know. I think we might have something like that. And that's exactly what they had, is one-minute clips.
All right.
And all they ask is that you play it all the way through. And at the end, of course, they promote their website, which there's a lot of good material there, honestly. So I wouldn't shy away from recommending people go there. But we've got that, and we've got a few of those queued up. But I think it's Let the Bible Speak. And certainly, whereas evolution has its problems, we're not going to take evolution away and replace it and leave it a void. We're going to replace it with something deeper and meaningful and eternal.
Yep.
So if we could, I'd actually like to look at Romans chapter 1, verses 18 through 22. I'll just read briefly from the ESV. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the passages that gets referenced by, obviously, creation.com, those folks, and a lot of folks that talk about this topic. And I think this, is a compelling internal evidence that we should be able to look at what's around us and recognize God from us. In fact, we're convicted by that. And that's what it says in these verses, starting in 18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world and the things that have been made. So they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking and their foolish hearts were darkened. Mm-hmm. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God, there's that word, for God, for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. And that flat out says, look, you can't go to the creation around you and go,
No, there's no God.
Yeah. Look at this, there's no God. Clearly there's no God here. And I think the more you're willing to just really look at the evidence, I'm going to say something that's going to sound really wacky. But I think it needs to be said. Yeah, me. Imagine that. I'm going to say something
wacky. This is the first time, everybody.
Don Patton was the first person who mentioned this to me, and I had to, I honestly laughed out loud when I heard this. But there's a few evolutionists that have actually said things like, well, we think alien brought life to Earth.
Yeah.
We think aliens did it. And I thought, doesn't that sound like something out of the 70s? Mm-hmm. like some wacky theory? That they came up with. But I think it's time for the top of the hour.
Yeah. You're listening to Scott Mitchell's Let Bible Speak on WBRO 89.9 FM. Our cast from beautiful Marengo, Indiana.
There it is.
Thank you, Matt. Good job.
Well, Theron, there was a whole History Channel had a whole series on ancient aliens.
Oh, yeah. Whatever sells, it's right? Whatever gets people to watch, I think.
By the way, a really good, if you can find it on Netflix or something like that, the movie came out a couple years ago, maybe longer than that, is Genesis History.
Mm.
It's a wonderful, wonderful show.
Yeah.
People on there with several doctorate degrees talking about all of the earth and layers on the earth and how all that fits together. It's wonderful, wonderful. You get a chance to watch it again. Doesn't prove there's a God. What it does is prove that what we've always thought about time is not accurate.
Right, right.
And so
that
time ingredient in this, that's the ingredient they have to have in order to make evolution even appear to work. Without that, they can't.
And again, I am far from convinced that just by throwing enormous amounts of time solves the problem.
Yeah,
they've had evolutionists have actually said, you know, we've been thinking like 10 billion years or something. That might not be enough. Like, they're admitting, well, we throw these numbers out so that magically that solves all the problems.
Okay.
But even then, they're not certain. Now, let me finish with the aliens, because we're not going to get back to that topic if I don't
finish
that.
Caleb, there's so much I want to say.
I know.
Anyway.
There's an hour. We'll have to follow up with more specific topics. Specific. Like, intelligent design would make a great one.
Yeah, and we're going to have to follow up on some things, and we will. But go ahead with your
aliens. Back to the aliens. We got to get the aliens in. That'll boost our rankings, right? Yeah. All of a sudden, Scott talked about aliens. As much as I laughed when I first heard that, and this has been 15 years ago or something that I heard this talk, maybe closer to 20 now I think about it, I literally laughed out loud when he said it. But you know what's funny is the more I think about it, the more I've seen this actually kind of gain a little traction, the more I realize, you know what? As crazy as it sounds, they are openly admitting something that they haven't been able to admit before. Because they couldn't say, you know what, our theories don't work. So this suggests there really is another power at work here that we can't explain.
Mm-hmm.
They're not willing to admit that, but they're admitting their theory doesn't work.
Yeah.
And they're admitting something else has to step in and make this happen because our theory just does not work.
Yep.
And that's what they're essentially admitting. Now, so since they can't say, you know what, you know, they can't even take the agnostic approach of saying, you know, we don't know, you know what, this points to something bigger, we don't know what it is.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to weigh in on it other than to say there's something else that we can't explain that's gone on here.
Yeah.
They have to try to explain it because they can't have a godly answer. So let's pick aliens. I literally laughed when I first heard that, but at least they're willing to admit, hey, the theory doesn't work.
Yep.
We need something else. Now, we know what that something else is. The Bible tells us that. But at least they're willing to admit, hey, we've got problems.
Yep.
And I give them some respect for that now in hindsight. Now, some of the stuff they've done is really clearly 70s psycho weird theories. But
they're admitting fault.
But they're admitting, hey, there's problems. So we have to find a way to solve
it. So in terms of what you, as far as the looking at the design and seeing that there's a God. One of the cool things about the Bible is that it reveals a lot of science truths.
Oh, absolutely.
And so when we go to Psalm 8 and verse 8.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of those deals where this Dr. Murray was sitting, or how do you say it? It's M-A-U-R-Y. Murray? How would you
pronounce? I'm not even sure.
Anyway, he's laying in bed in the hospital. He told his daughter to pick up her Bible and read it to him.
Mm.
So she's reading the Bible, and she reads this, and it says in chapter 8, verse 7, says, all sheep and oxen and also the beast of the field, the birds of the heavens and the fish of the sea, whatever passes along the paths of the seas.
Paths of the sea.
And he thought, well, wait a minute. If the Bible says there are paths in the sea, I'm going to go find them.
Yeah.
And he did. And he revolutionized shipping lines and saved all kinds of time because they were literally fighting against the currents.
Literally.
And he found them and he was able to help speed up shipping, you know, and all that because of something as simple as that. Mm-hmm. It was there all along.
Right, right.
Again, doesn't prove there's a God,
right,
but it proves there's something going on.
Right.
And just for that simple little fact that stated there.
Mm-hmm.
And he went out and found, you know, if you watched Nemo, the EAC, the East Australian Current, you know, he found those things.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of what the Bible says. And again, that design is there.
Right.
We just have to be willing to look for it.
Do you want to talk about anesthesia?
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I thought you told me the story.
I don't think so.
I've heard the story somewhere. I hate quoting stories that I don't know. Because I don't know the origin.
Well, we
the
can,
story I heard... and
we encourage them to look it up.
And look this up, and please double check us. But the story I heard, at least, is that they didn't used to put people to sleep when they did surgeries. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, that was uncomfortable, to say the least. And obviously, when you're in excruciating pain, how can you stand still while they're performing a surgery? And the story I heard, at least, was the person who came up with anesthesiology saw that when God removed the rib from Adam, he put Adam to sleep and thought, boy, doesn't that sound like a better way to do a surgery than...
So then you got to find a way to liquor them up or whatever. They, so
yeah, that cool. Well, but that's the story I heard. Yeah. Again,
that might be true. I mean, maybe.
Right. If it's true, it's a good example of what you're pointing out.
If not, it's still a cool story.
It's a cool story, no matter how you put it. But not as cool as most of your stories.
Well, you know, those little things, you know, Job 36 talks about the water cycle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Should we go look at that or not?
We got 25 minutes.
Well, I don't know what. Again, you've got plenty.
You want to do any of the creation minutes?
Yeah, we can do it. While I'm looking for, you play a creation minute while I'm digging around in here for some of my notes.
So we're doing a little experiment. What we're doing, actually. Oh, would you please? Yeah. Why do you have to do this now? Picks the worst time. Okay. So I've got three of these. We don't have to play all of these in our program, but. These are some of those clips that we talked about. If you've gotten the CDs, you've probably heard these. Yeah. But for other folks, they wouldn't have heard these.
Are we going to try to start implementing these during the show? Is that your goal, or you just want
to? It's up to you. We've talked about doing it before. Yeah.
Anyway,
it's kind of up to you, Scott. Anyway, let me. I kind of like this. This is a general intro to the topic. It's called Evidence for God.
Someone might ask, how can you believe in God when there isn't a single shred of evidence? How can you take that leap of faith? But on the contrary, the Bible tells us that the heavens are telling of the glory of God, and their expanse is declaring the work of his hands. And, since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse. And perhaps sternly, the Bible tells us that the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. So the Bible tells us that the evidence for God is everywhere, and it's overwhelming, if we just open our eyes to see it. There are many highly qualified scientists today who believe that the Bible's account of creation is true, and that the observable scientific evidence testifies to its accuracy.
To find out more from Creation Ministries International, visit our website, creation.com.
So if I can only get that cool Aussie accent down, I could sound cool like that, right?
Well, if that's what it takes to sound cool, I guess so.
Well, he made reference to what we read in Romans. He also made reference to Psalms 19, which we have queued up if we can find some time for it. But
we'll find time for it.
Right.
One more real quick in Job 36. I'll just read this because, it's just one of those things that's just laying there for people to see that they didn't see for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And... Job 36, beginning in verse 27, says, "For he draws up the drops of water, and they distill his mist and rain, which the skies pour down, and drop on man abundantly. Can anyone understand the spreading of the clouds, the thunderings of his pavilions? Behold, he scatters his lightning about him and covers the roots of the sea. For by these he judges people, he gives food in abundance."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the water cycle.
Sure. Sure.
In a book, Job was considered probably the oldest book in the Bible.
Yes.
It's laying there for people to see. And they're, okay, that makes sense. That's why. Well, how long did it take for people to discover the water cycle when it was there? But these little things exist for us to see.
Mm-hmm.
And you go out and watch it happen. It's like, well, that does make sense.
Yeah.
And that's what I want people. I want people investigating these things and digging in deeper and finding out about these things. Don't just... You don't have to say, "I believe God, that's it." I'm not, without backing it up.
Right, right.
God's given us his creation to back it up with.
Sure, sure.
It's not a blind leap of faith. It never has been and never should be.
Right.
Anyway, so you mentioned some things, so go ahead.
Yeah,
I'll
be
quiet now.
That might be a good, well, actually, maybe. I think this is a good segue to read at least the first six verses of Psalm 19, since that was actually referenced in the creation minute that we just listened to. Again, this is Psalm 19, verses 1 through 6, and I typically read from the English Standard. It reads well.
That's what I've got here.
"The heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims his handiwork. Day to day pours out speech, and night to night reveals knowledge. There is no speech, nor are there words, whose voice is not heard. Their voice goes out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In them he has set up a tent for the sun, which comes out like a bridegroom leaving his chamber, and like a strong man runs its course with joy. Its rising is from the end of the heavens, and its circuit to the end of them, and there is nothing hidden from its heat. So those first four verses in particular, the language can be a little hard to follow, but it's actually saying, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims his handiwork. And in verses 2, 3, and 4, it's talking about how those words continue on. I mean, the first four verses are strictly talking about what we start in verse 1, that the heavens and the sky are proclaiming his handiworks. And this is, again, what Romans alludes to, in that God's glory is manifest in the beauty of his creation.
Yep.
And what other creature, other than mankind made in his image, can turn back to God and give him the praise he deserves for what he gave us?
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's funny because when we talk, especially when we're doing like a communion talk, it's so easy to say, you know, this is the central defining moment of all creation, is when God became man and sacrificed himself for us. But at the same time, I think there's a good argument to say the fact that we are made in his image, that he created us in the first place, if there's anything greater than Jesus' sacrifice, that would be it.
Yeah.
Right? And to think that we are made in his image, that we are made of not just this fleshy tint that we wear, but of something eternal, this consciousness that we have, that science can't really explain.
Yeah. Yeah.
And some people are willing to admit that, frankly. That the depth of consciousness we have is made us in God's image, and we're the only creation that can really turn back to God and give him praise and glory for who he is and what he has done.
Yep. Interesting.
Try to follow that up, Mr. Smarty Pants.
Okay, then. Let's do that. Let's talk about ice. You talk about design, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. It's interesting when you, I encourage you to study ice. And what what it does. Not
too
because
much,
it cools your drink.
Now,
Ruth McKinney likes lots of ice.
Does she now?
If she orders a glass of tea, she says, I want a lot of ice and I want an extra glass of ice. Because she keeps her glass full of ice. But
good for her.
What does that mean? What does ice mean for nature?
It means a lot.
By design.
Yeah.
What's really cool about water is, first of all, it's the only substance that occurs naturally in all three states of matter on its own on the face of the planet, which is really interesting in
that
and of itself. But when you look at water and how it freezes, and the way God designed it, and there is no other, I don't think, any way, because of the elements that make it up, when it cools, it becomes less dense.
Yeah, that's really backwards.
Which is backwards, because you take, like, I was putting freeze plugs in an old, old Mustang, helping a guy one time, and he put the freeze plugs in the freezer, and they shrunk. When you put them in the holes in the engine block and they heat up, they swell back up, snap into place.
Yep.
That's the natural, more normal, not natural, just more normal thing.
Yep.
When water cools, it becomes less dense. Mm-hmm. So the cool water in a lake, where does it move to if it's less dense? To the top or bottom?
Top.
It goes to the top. So what freezes first, the top or the bottom?
Top.
So if it froze, if it behaved normally,
yeah,
the way we think of things normal, it would, those cold water would sink to the bottom, it would freeze from the bottom up, and it would kill everything.
Kill all of the life, yeah.
And because of the way it's designed, because it floats, it freezes at the top and allows things underneath to live. That's totally cool.
Yeah.
And water's no pun intended. Special. No pun intended there about water being cool or ice being cool. But that, I mean, those kind of things, when you study those, it's like, wow, there is design.
Yeah.
There is purpose.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a reason that that happens. Otherwise, people would only get to go fishing one time in all of eternity until the cold, and it would kill everything, you know, and there'd be no fish. No, it was just really cool that that happens.
Right.
And it's not supposed to.
There are so many things. We don't have the numbers sitting here, but when you get into some of the reading material, you encounter this. There are so many things about what we know about our universe, life itself, that if there were the slightest variation, the whole thing would fall apart. Yep. Life couldn't exist. The universe
couldn't exist.
Yeah.
What is the temperature variation in the solar system? from lowest from zero to hottest,
Kelvin to
whatever it is.
To whatever.
It, water exists in a liquid state in a very small window.
Right.
Of those.
Right, right.
So that means there has to be the right star, the right distance. Everything, like you said, if it was off an nth degree, it wouldn't work.
Right.
It couldn't work.
Right. Yeah, the fact that that life itself, Earth, is an incredible blessing and an anomaly. Science has only made the probability of us having what we have now smaller and smaller the more they discovered. And they've come to, I think, discover more and more how precipitous our situation is, right? You know, like the energy state that, that the universe rests at. If we were off by a little bit, we wouldn't have the universe. Yeah. I mean, there's the more they've explored, the more they realize, if you're honest, I mean, and let's be honest, the more you realize, wow, this is really, one could say, statistically impossible.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very fair statement to say. That, what we have is statistically impossible.
The book, the giraffe neck where Darwin went wrong book, that guy points out mathematically, he uses probability in there.
Yeah, yeah.
And what the way they explain evolution is mathematically impossible for it to happen.
Exactly.
Because
exactly
it's like 10 to the 450th power. Anything scientifically possible has to be less than 10 to the, what was it? 10 to the 6th power, I think, something like that. Somewhere, but it's so astronomically larger than what's possible, it's absolutely impossible.
It gets even better. Because I've heard some of the same discussions.
Yeah.
And this was an angle that I hadn't thought about, but it makes sense. When we talk about the universe, right, and we talk about time scales, we throw these big numbers that make it seem like infinite. Like, oh, wow, if you have so much time or the universe is infinite, then I guess anything's possible, right? That's not true. That's, in fact, it's mathematically not true.
Yep.
Ironically, believe it or not, you can actually run the numbers and you can... The more we look at quantum physics, the more we realize everything looks continuous, but it's actually discrete. At the, you get low enough level, there's actually discrete operations that are occurring.
Yeah.
What happens is you can literally look at the probability of having life in Earth and everything that we have. You can actually run the numbers and go, okay, this is the probability, huge number. What are the probabilistic resources available to the universe to make it happen? And it's not infinite. It's finite. You would think, oh, it's just infinite. No, it's not. It's finite. The universe is finite, and there are only so many opportunities for random things to happen. The universe does not have the probabilistic, I hope I'm using that term correctly, resources to create life.
You seem excited.
You think? Just a little.
You seem excited.
Well, this stuff is exciting.
It is exciting.
It's, well,
I've forgotten to do this. Phone number 812-620-4034, or ask a question on Facebook Live, or come back later and ask questions on the website or Facebook, and we'll get to those. And if there's something you want to have discussed, if there's one of these, if there's a subject,
even if it's Martin, we'll talk about Martin.
If there's something you want to have, we can devote a show to whatever topic you. I mean, there is more than enough information for us to do that. If you want to hear something talked about, Job, you mentioned as we learn more. And I'm not going to get into the story about how this verse got me in trouble, but it goes to the point of,
you
as we learn more, we're going to realize more things and put pieces together. In Job 39, God asked Job a question. And we know the answer to this question now. They may not have known it then. Yeah. The question is, it says, do you know when the mountain goat gives birth? Do you observe the calving of the does? Can you number the months that they fulfill? And do you know the time when they give birth, when they crouch, bringing forth their offspring and are delivered of their young? That's asking the gestation of a mountain goat, the gestation period of a mountain goat. We know that today.
Sure. You know that today.
I know that today, having raised goats. But I'm not, again, that kind of information, as we learn more about nature and about science, I think the pieces of the puzzle will fall into places even more to back up what, as we learn more with science, it does back up what the Bible says. There has not been any science, any real science, that's ever disputed the Bible.
Well,
and here's why I say here's why I say that. When I taught science, we taught the kids the scientific method. When they did scientific, we did science fairs, and we taught them what science was. You ask a question, mm-hmm. you develop a hypothesis, mm-hmm. you develop an experiment, you test your hypothesis, yeah. and you do an analysis and a conclusion. If you're right, you retest it to see if you get the same result.
Right.
If you're wrong, you analyze why you change one variable mm-hmm. and retest it.
Right.
And go again.
Right.
Then maybe you change another variable and go back. Can we do that with evolution?
Well, I
is
think,
there a way to right. test and retest?
No.
Okay.
The simple answer is no.
Okay, good.
But to your point earlier about, well, silence will reveal more truth, I think one of the things we're alluding to, and we can talk about that more, mm-hmm. we're running out of time, but
quickly,
buy the book, it's good. Evolutionists as a whole are not willing to admit God. They won't let God in the door, and they will promptly refute anything that suggests it, and so they are extremely biased.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And so, because their presupposition is
big word
is there is no God. We can't allow the concept of a God.
So
we can't allow something we can't, you know. Yeah. Maybe we'll throw aliens in there if we're really creative, but they automatically will try to skew everything they see and sell it that way. Now, we probably should, with the few minutes we have, we probably need to really talk about things they actually say.
Yeah.
If I can, let's do that, because I think this is too important.
I haven't even talked about. I mentioned dinosaur poop. I haven't gotten to that.
Well, that's the problem. Is an hour is not even close to long enough.
Mary Schweitzer's discovery. We'll get to those things.
Right,
later.
Right. Well, let me get in maybe at least a couple of these.
Yeah.
These aren't too quick a read, but I'll try to quickly. So these are quotes from actual evolutionists, and I think it's important to quote the source. So this particular person is a gentleman by the name of Philip Skell. He died in 2010. He's known as the father of carbene chemistry, and this is an open letter that he published. He sent to the to the Kansas State Board of Education in 2005. So this is he's kind of saying he's willing to stand up and say, "Hey guys, we need to think about how we're approaching this." And this is what he says: "I have found that some of my scientific colleagues are very reluctant to acknowledge the existence of problems with evolutionary theory to the general public. They display an almost religious zeal for our strictly Darwinian view of biological origins. For those scientists who take it seriously, Darwinian evolution has functioned more as a philosophical belief system than as a testable scientific hypothesis."
Oh.
That sounds like what you just said.
I didn't know you were going to read that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. "This quasi-religious function of the theory is, I think, what lies behind many of the extreme statements that have doubtless encountered from scientists opposing any criticism of neo-Darwinism in the classroom. It is also why many scientists make public statements about the theory that they would not defend privately to other scientists like me." So they'll go out and publicly say how great it is, but within their own circle, they'll kind of say, well, they would be embarrassed to try to defend mm-hmm. that against their own peers. So since we're running short on time, let me think. Here, let me read this one. This one's just a little bit older. Let's see. This goes back to 71, but it's a little shorter, so maybe we can squeeze it in. This is from I. Harrison Matthews, FRS, whatever that is. He's a zoologist and a fellow of the Royal Society.
Okay.
And this is the introduction to Darwin's Origin of the Species, okay? This is actually included in as the introduction. "The fact of evolution is the backbone of biology, and biology is thus in the peculiar position of being founded on a unproved theory." Wait, I thought it was fact. People adamantly yell at you, fact, but this is the introduction
to Darwin's origin of the species.
I had written much later, obviously, but looking at it now, saying, oh, it was founded on an unproved theory. Is it then a science or a faith? What? I thought it was all fact. "Belief in the theory of evolution is thus exactly parallel to belief in special creation. Both are concepts which believers know to be true, but neither up to the present has been capable of proof." Now, I'm not necessarily a believer that you just go look at the evidence and based on your pre-assumption that you are going to read it different ways. I think the facts do kind of speak for themselves. But these are just a couple quotes. These are actual evolutionists, like the guy you were quoting.
Yeah.
That's admitting we've got problems. It's really shocking. I'll just be candid. It's really shocking that Darwinism in particular is still touted. Because very few of the evolutionists, if they were really honest, are not Darwinists, because there were just so many flaws. They embraced Darwin as kind of this emblem, this philosophy of we don't need God, basically. But very few of them, they have this thing called neo-Darwinism, which is kind of like an attempt to kind of resurrect it, in a sense. But very few people really go back to the core Darwinism, because it's just so full of holes, right? But they fall under that umbrella of, well, we're going to rally behind Darwin as our poster child.
To that point, I was reading an article on creation.com a couple days ago about some of these things. And this Dr. Schweitzer that discovered basically still viable tissue on dinosaur bones, like stretchy ligaments, red blood cells, all that stuff, it's not supposed to exist. Science says that it really shouldn't exist or be in nature more than 10,000 years before it breaks down into its little parts where you can't tell what it was before. So red blood cells break down. And she found these. When they dug the dinosaurs up, it smelled like a decaying animal. Okay? Mm-hmm. Well, and she's still an evolutionist.
Right, right.
Her fellow evolutionist sent death threats, tried to get her to stop talking about this.
Right, right.
And one of her colleagues said he didn't believe what she had.
Right, right.
And she asked him, well, how much evidence would it take? He said, I'm not going to believe that.
Yeah.
He just is determined, no matter what the evidence says, because of the time. What she did when she discovered that is remove the time factor.
Right. Well, the whole theory collapses entirely.
Because this T-Rex, they found him, was like 63 million years old. Well,
really?
If the tissue decomposes to the point you can't recognize it anymore, and at a maximum 10,000 years, or let's say 3 million years, which is, what happened to the other 60 million years? What happens to that time?
Wait, they're not supposed to even overlap.
And that's why he doesn't want to accept, because it takes the time factor away. Mm-hmm. And she's still trying to explain it away by testing different things that would cause tissue to last that long, because she wants to be an evolutionist.
Right, right.
But what she found doesn't allow it.
Right, right.
That's out there. And they have found many more sites where there are decaying dinosaurs.
Right, right.
Well, what happened all those years? Mm-hmm. It points to a young Earth rather than an old Earth.
Oh,
but
right.
They don't want the truth. They will not. They literally will not accept the truth.
There is a creation minute that really plays well to that, and we could go a little over. We might actually want to play that, because it dovetails really well to this. I want to mention this in part because it's so close to where we are. So less than an hour from where we're sitting right here, there's a place called the Falls of the Ohio.
Yes, there
are. It's famous.
Our friend Matt mentioned that this morning to me.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I highly recommend it. It's going to be very evolutionary when you go through the...
Oh, it's extremely.
They go on and on about evolutionary stuff. But here's an interesting story that you're probably not going to find in the museum. There was a discovery at the Falls of the Ohio where there were human footprints on top of dinosaur footprints. I'm sorry, my bad. I had it backwards, right? Because it's a bad... You would expect that, right? Dinosaur footprints, human footprints. The other way around, right? There were human footprints, and then on top of them were dinosaur footprints. Well, that can't be.
Formed in the same layer.
Was it formed in the same layer?
Yeah, because...
I know they were intermixed in some way that said, no, that it wasn't...
It shows they were there at the same time. It wasn't the same layer.
Okay, thank you for clarification, because it's been a while since I heard the story. Yeah. Well, that's interesting in and of itself, but I think the reaction is the thing that's even more interesting. So there was a scientist that discovered this, right? And of course, creationists were quick to point out, look what this says, guys. I mean, this is a glaring...
Paradigm shift for the scientist that wasn't willing to make.
That's a different story. But what happened is, after this was discovered, and this happened less than an hour from where we're at right now, is somebody in the middle of the night was out there breaking up the fossil. Now, is that somebody who is standing for truth that does not need to be defended because it's truth, or is that somebody that's not willing to let the facts speak for themselves?
In history, if people don't want the truth, what have they always tried to do? They try to do to Jesus?
Suppress it.
They try to destroy the evidence, and that's what they did with Jesus, and that's what they did with those fossils.
Right, right. Okay, now this is a great clip because this ties in really well with what we're talking about right
we
now.
We can let this kind of... I'll let you have the closing
remarks. Have you ever wondered what sort of evidence would convince an atheist that the universe was designed? Scott Todd from Kansas State University gave a startling answer. Even if all the data pointed to an intelligent designer, such an hypothesis is excluded from science because it is not naturalistic. Well, candid admissions like this show us that some people will reject a designer no matter what the evidence. But recognizing design has long been a part of science. When an archaeologist finds an artifact like a piece of pottery, he knows immediately that it was designed by someone, even though he can't see the designer. So if design has no place in science, archaeologists are in serious trouble. Forensic science, who killed who, is also about recognizing the evidence of intelligent agency, proving that it was no accident. But when the evidence in science points to God being the intelligent designer, never.
To find out more from Creation Ministries International, visit our website, creation.com.
That sounds exactly like what we just said.
Again, we didn't plan this.
Only loosely.
So, in order to close this thing out in a more intellectual manner, Theron, why don't you, I'll take the closing remarks and we'll end it at that.
Okay, so I get to take a swing at the ball and hope I can hit the fence, right? I think this has been alluded to, but I'm an engineer by trade, and I consider myself a person who's interested in science. I'm interested in facts. And so a lot of people will say, and I think there's some biblical support for this, the philosophy that God's not going to just take you and grab you and scream, I am God, you must believe in me, because we lose the opportunity for choice. And I think there's something to be learned by having faith in him, much like the faith of Abraham. And so while I don't think God's going to absolutely slap us in the face and come down to us personally and force us to believe in him, I also don't believe that the evidence is stacked against him either. And I think when we step back and we look at the evidence, and I think we look at the Bible telling us, you know, you should be able to look around you and say there is God. Your heart's going to tell you that, but I don't think it's in contrast to your mind. I think when you look objectively at the facts, there's some very compelling evidence that the facts point to God. In fact, traditionally, scientists were theists themselves who looked at creation, looked at the laws of science, and saw all the order and said, wow. What an incredible designer do we have, right? And ultimately, it was this thinking of, well, we don't want God. And that kind of took root in a lot of the scientific community. And so, as we've talked about, they're biased against the idea of God, and they've tried to shut him out. But that doesn't mean that the evidence itself says there is no God, even though that's what they're going to tell you, because that's how they're presenting it to you. And I think it's important that we go and look for ourselves and try to find the evidence and see. And I think your mind can follow what your heart's going to tell you. I think when you look at the universe and look at creation and step out and look at it, if you've ever seen a solar eclipse, for example, which is amazing, you realize what I was talking about earlier, that, you know, we were created in God's image that we can turn and give him the glory as only his own creation can do. And I think the facts are not in contrast to what our heart's telling us when we look at the creation and the universe.
So we encourage them to let the Bible speak and close it out.
You're not gonna jump in with that line? No. But going back to again the idea of what we're trying to do with the program is we want to let the Bible speak for itself. Each and every day. We want to try to live that. I mean, we talk about it, but we really want to try to live. Let's go to the Bible. It's God's word. And when you think about creation, remember that we know the Creator.
Yep.
And we want to be with him, and we're looking forward to the day when we can be.
Amen.
And we just let the Bible speak.
Thank you, brother. Thanks for being on.
Thank you.
Matt, thanks for your work, and thanks
Thank you,
for
Mr.
anyone
Matt.
Who was on. I don't know who all was on this morning. Didn't see a screen.
Nope.
So, Em, if you're on, good morning. If not, I'll see you later. And Abigail, she's in Tennessee. Emma's in
Tennessee.
And down in Bowling Green, so... I don't know where all my kids are. I can find them on Life 360 on my phone.
Is that right?
Appreciate everybody and the opportunities, and we just want to do a little bit of good, no harm. Appreciate everybody. Thank you very much.
You're a good man.